Welcome to Richer Life. Our goal is to help you drive more money, motivation, and meaning into your life. So today I'm having a pretty special conversation with Brian Power. He works for Google. He's actually the People Operations Manager within their recruiting department. And he and I are going to talk about what it takes to get a job. And so, Brian, thank you for coming on here and sharing some of your insight with us.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
Okay, so I guess the first question would be, what exactly is a People Operation Manager for Google? What do you do there?
Sure. So I manage a team of recruiters based in New York and in South America, and my team recruits for the sales organization, hiring people that will sell Google.
So what do you mean by that, sell Google?
So Google is, you know, many people think of Google as a technology company, but we make our money in the advertising industry. And so there is a large group within Google called the sales organization that spends its time building relationships with the various people who use products like AdWords to generate better advertising online.
Okay, and so you started out as a job recruiter there. Now you manage a team, but you started out as a recruiter, correct?
That's correct. So I've been here for about 6 years. My first role was a recruiter working with a few different organizations within Google. And I've spent time in the engineering recruiting organizations and the product management organizations and now the sales recruiting organization.
Okay, so this is, I mean, I think this is a really compelling conversation because, you know, we're talking to someone who's actually hiring people today. And so my guess is that a lot of the people who are going to be reading this and or listening to this may be unemployed or may be at jobs that they just don't really love and want to make a change. And, of course, unemployment is really high, and there's a lot of fear, a lot of trepidation out there about what it takes to actually get a job today. And so I'm wondering if you can share with us some of the things that you've seen applicants do to sort of break through the noise. Because, I mean, you always hear about a company posting a job and they get thousands and thousands of submissions. And so how does that person stand out from the crowd? What have you seen that's worked in the past?
Sure, it's a great question, and you know, one I've heard from a lot of people. I think one thing that's changed a lot with the advent of the Internet is you feel much closer to a lot of information that's out there about jobs. So if you just look at how things have changed with companies being able to post all of their openings online, this is information that was kind of much harder to come across 10 to 15 years ago. And so there's this idea that you can send your resume out to 1,000 companies in one day, where, you know, again, 15, 20 years ago, they would have been sending out 1,000 envelopes. It's kind of a different, it's a different feeling today. It's very easy to click send when you send your resume out. So I think that people can spend a lot of time doing that same activity over and over and over again, sending their resume to every job that is posted on the Internet, and I think that that's a very difficult strategy. People that I've seen break from the crowd, as you've termed it there, spend a much higher level of focus and energy around a smaller set of opportunities. I think the way to think about it is, you know, there's a certain group of companies or specific roles that you're probably really good for. And you want to spend more energy around that smaller group of roles and companies than on trying to make yourself attractive to a wide range of people, right? And so to kind of take it back to the real world, if you took it offline, you know, I live in downtown Manhattan. And if I was a job seeker and I was to go knock on 1,000 doors, you know, I don't know that that would be a good strategy to kind of get my foot in any one of those doors. But if I identified, you know, 10 to 20 that I really, you know, could inform myself about these companies and these roles, and I felt strongly that I would be a good for, spend more time trying to get in there than to cover as many as you can.
So it clearly sounds like it comes down to quality versus just quantity. And you bring up a really interesting point in that it is fairly easy for someone over the course of a few hours to send out hundreds, if not thousands, of their resumes to various companies. And because all of these jobs are available online, I guess that's an opportunity, but it's almost a challenge because I can do it, it means that everyone else out there can do it as well. And thus you just get flooded, as a recruiter, as a company, you get flooded with all of these applicants. And so your approach then is to take a step back and to, even though you might feel desperate to get a job if you've been unemployed for a while, and to take a step back and to really focus in on a handful of companies that are probably a better fit for you. And so I guess I'm also wondering, let's say you've identified these maybe 10 or 20 companies. What if they're not all hiring right now? I've heard of one strategy of someone, basically, for the companies that are not hiring, you develop a relationship there anyway. Even though they're not hiring today, maybe they will be a month from now or 6 months from now. Do you think that's a worthwhile approach?
So I think it's always healthy to just be continually networking and developing more and more connections and relationships for your own personal network. To your point, it's exactly right. I mean, I think companies are dynamic. You know, people leave, people go, the economy goes up and down. And, you know, when someone's not hiring today, they may be hiring a month from now or 3 months from now and 6 months from now. And the work you can do to be ready for when that happens is can only benefit you. Rather than, you know, if you're only focusing on the groups that have openings, it's a pretty competitive marketplace, right? And so I think if you know about a place that you're interested in getting into or getting a job at, you want to stay close. Try to build relationships within that organization. So as things happen, you're closer to the source.
And so with a large company like Google or others, they have entire departments of recruiters. But what, let's just say it's a smaller company. And let's say I'm a job seeker and I've identified this smaller company as being one that really I think might be a very good fit for me. And I go online that they're not hiring right now and they don't have a job recruiting department. Do you think it would make sense for me to reach out to someone within that organization to take them out to lunch, to develop some kind of a relationship with them, even though they're not hiring today?
Well, you know, I think you want to be thoughtful of people's time and attention, right? I mean, people who are at the company that might not be hiring now are probably busy doing things, and getting a lunch or a connection, if you can do that with your personal network, just in the interest of networking, is a pretty good step. I think the challenge is if you don't know anybody there, how do you get that first relationship? That's kind of a common question that comes up more. You know, thankfully with the internet today, there's lots of information out there. And so, you know, it's rare that an organization isn't going to be involved in some type of activities where they're going to be a part of events or hosting events, whether it's, you know, speakers within an industry. You can go there and meet people in a different setting and make that first connection and follow up from there.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. That you're right. I mean, a lot of these organizations are involved in other activities, and it would be a great way to sort of meet people outside of the office setting and maybe develop the relationship that way. And now in a world of where everything is electronic, you send your resume electronically, does actually sending something through the post office make sense anymore? Does it get more attention if a resume is mailed versus emailed?
That's a difficult question. I mean, I think companies have moved a lot of their operations online, right? And so it's not that a resume coming through the mail stands out. It's ultimately going to end up into the electronic system. So someone is going to receive it, and they may scan it and then get it online. But I don't think that it's like a secret door, if that's what you're asking, or a way around the online systems. Companies that have their jobs online are kind of building that way, and ultimately that's where things are going to funnel through.
So ultimately it'll be electronic anyway. What about sending the resume in and then following it up with a phone call?
Again, I think that it really depends on the organization, right? I think that email works, you know, and the resume is submitted, and so following up is kind of trying to dictate a different step from the way the company might be operating. Right, and so it really is going to depend on the organization, and it may be helpful for some, and it might not be helpful for others.
Yeah, and I think some of the frustration for the applicants is that they've sent out. If you look at the stats, a lot of people have been unemployed for a long time, and I think you just get to the point where you're frustrated. You've sent out a lot of resumes. And that you sort of get the feeling that, you know, this resume emailing is just not effective. I'm sending them out. I'm not getting any interviews. Nothing's sort of happening for me. I seem overqualified for a lot of these jobs. This process just doesn't seem to be working. And so I think there's this almost this compulsion to try something different. Do you think that could be harmful for a candidate?
Well, let's talk about that for a second. You know, if you're going to use one resume to send to 1,000 different people, for that resume to feel worthy to send to 1,000 different people, such a wide audience, you're gonna generalize, right? You're gonna talk about things so that lots of people might be interested. And to get back to the earlier point, I've seen people stand out by spending a lot of focus on making their resume very interesting to a smaller group of people. And there's just no way to do that if you're gonna blanket an audience in the thousands, right? If you think about the letters that you get in your mailbox, the ones that are addressed to thousands of people, you can kind of tell, right? But the letter that is addressed to you with your name on, with a personal message, is the one that you actually read. And so when you spend time putting your resume together, if you're putting it together for one opportunity or five opportunities, that comes through because you can focus on the details that are going to be interesting to that smaller audience. If you're going to use the same thing over and over, and this is a cover letter or a resume, you have to kind of water it down in the hopes that it will be interesting to people, but you're kind of not close enough to their interest to make it work.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to your earlier point, and that is really focus in on 10 or 20 or a handful of opportunities rather than this shotgun blanket approach.
Yeah, and I know that that's the frustration, right, because you spend lots of time sending out lots of resumes and you just want one to stick, so to speak, or to get that first phone call. But, you know, I tell people if you're going to spend 3 or 4 hours working on your resume and looking for job opportunities, it's better to really narrow the scope, right? If you're spending, 5 to 10 seconds just emailing your resume for 4 or 5 hours, that's kind of going to come through. But if you spend 2 to 3 hours, using Google to look up everything you can to learn about the company, really trying to figure out who you're connected to that might be there to get that first introduction, that's hard work. That takes a long time, but ultimately will be more productive.
Yeah, okay, so the theme is really focus on quality, focus on a handful of opportunities, and really put the time in there rather than just looking at anything that comes your way and hitting send. So you talk about really personalizing the approach. That's typically been done with the cover letter, but you're also suggesting that the resume really be crafted almost for each opportunity or for each related opportunity.
Well, I think what you want to do is, a common mistake I think I see with resumes, there's really two. One is that people tend to want to put down everything they've ever done, right? So it turns into this laundry list of responsibilities they've had and how they spent all of their time. What really differentiates you is your accomplishments, right? So if your resume reads like a job description, you have to understand that there's probably a lot of other people that had similar jobs, and that's not going to help you stand out from the crowd. If you focus on your accomplishments, and the most important way to do that is really quantify what you were able to accomplish, that is what will differentiate you from the group of people that had similar roles. So for example, with salespeople, sometimes they're afraid to put down the size of their revenue that they generated or what percentage they exceeded their quota or what their quota was because they think it might be too small. The issue is the lack of that number doesn't allow the person looking at your resume the context to decide whether you fit or not. And what you want is the number to be interesting to a few group of people. So say you're responsible for selling $1 million, but you're afraid that 10 million is what the group is looking for. No number is going to be uninteresting to everybody. But someone who's looking for someone who's in the range of $500 to $1.5 million in revenue, for example, is going to be very interested in that number. And that's what you want. You only really need one job. And so focus on the group of people who are going to be more attracted to your set of accomplishments.
So really be very specific in the resume. And what you said that there were two mistakes that you see.
Yeah. So the second one, which is, a point of frustration, I think, across the board, is around the basics. Right, and so you have to understand at the early stage, a company doesn't have a lot of information about you, and the resume is kind of the only thing they have to go on. Little things like typos, grammatical errors, formatting, it's just totally inexcusable. And I think people can be frustrated like, I missed because I had just one letter wrong on my resume. In the absence of any other information, that letter can indicate other things. It can indicate sloppiness, attention to detail. Maybe it was just a simple mistake, but maybe it was something bigger. And to be honest, handing your resume to someone else to look for typos is a very simple step. And you have you have as much time as you need to get this ready, so those basics are critical.
And so you see a lot of those kinds of just really bad mistakes.
Unfortunately, and that's across the board because you can often see someone's talented, but that that mistake in this day and age, you know, given the competition in the marketplace at that early on, is unfortunate, but it's inexcusable.
Now, what about kind of crazy resumes? You know, they're on pink paper, they're scented, they're whatever. I mean, this clearly can't be emailed, but maybe there are some wacky graphics, other kinds of things that, as the applicant, they're just trying to stand out. They're trying to get someone's attention to say, hey, look at mine, look at me. I'm a little crazy, but, you know, at least I've got you looking at my resume. Is that, again, doing more harm than good?
Well, I think about it. I mean, I've seen a wide range of this, and it's funny. You know, I was we were talking with my team last week. We got a really creative-looking background that had two typos on it, and ultimately, it was the typos that bore out the decision. So, reasonable idea that was shot down by kind of failing at the basics. I think, you know, those things are an interesting approach, but ultimately, it's going to come down to who you are, right? If I had a pink resume that kind of got my attention next to a resume that was very specific with a set of accomplishments that were more appropriate for the role, the pink resume isn't going to change the conversation.
No, but I think the impression is, again, from talking to a lot of applicants, I think the impression is that they hit send or they mail the resume, and they just have this fear that nobody is looking at it, that the company is inundated with all of these resumes, and that no one is ever going to look at their resume, even if they spend 3 hours on it and it's precise and it's perfectly suited for this company. Their fear is that no one looks at it. And so I think the idea is, well, if I make it jazzy, if I make it kind of crazy, at least someone, somewhere will look at it.
Well, I mean, I think actually, you know, given that all this, so much of this stuff is online, it's not like you're looking at a pile of white pages and you pull out the pink one, right? And so, you know, I think it's a hard problem because even before the internet, you have so many resumes coming in that this is not a new problem. Right, you had a similar challenge when you were mailing in your resume. Did anybody get it? How come I didn't get a response? So it's not new with the internet. I don't know. My advice is, you know, if you're a creative person and you have ideas you want to take a chance on, you know, that's really up to you. It's an idea you need to own, but I don't know that this, again, that it gets around the process of looking for the best applicant that's out there.
And so maybe you can discuss what that process is. I mean, let's say you post a job. You're looking for, you know, XYZ position, and you get, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000, probably more applicants. Is there someone who looks at each of those and then says, you know, good, okay, not so good? I mean, how does the process work?
Well, typically in any company, you know, whoever's responsible for recruiting, whether it's the recruiting department or a manager at a small company that has to kind of do their own hiring, focuses on that problem first, which is who are all the available applicants that are interested in this role, and then you kind of go through the resumes that you have in front of you. And so this happens everything, again, from a startup company with 5 people that's inundated resumes to larger corporations that get, you know, hundreds of thousands of resumes. It kind of begins with looking at everyone. And I think regardless of the size of the company or size of the applicant pool, you look at a resume and you decide early on, you know, is the right information on here for me to take the next step, right? And I think, again, that gets back to why it's so important to be specific on your resume. If your resume is very general and it reads like a job description, you kind of can't tell what the person was able to accomplish, that's not going to look as compelling as someone who was able to articulate that.
And so, again, just going back, because you said something that reminded me of it, it's not so much on the resume what you did, but really what you achieved. It's not, well, you know,
exactly.
this was my job description, is, but how did what I do actually benefit the company somehow?
Exactly. Like, the advice I give when people are writing the resume is you have to start by putting down what you were asked to do. And to some element, that's your job description. I was manager of 10 people. I was responsible for this sales territory. I was responsible for this product line. But if you just say that, you're not answering the question, like, okay, well, what happened because of those responsibilities, right? So if you had 8 people on your team that you were a manager of, what did that team actually accomplish?
Yeah, right. Sell the benefit.
If you were given this sales territory, how much were you able to grow revenue? And so that is where I see most people miss on providing the level of specific, is start by saying what you were asked to do. Like, what did your manager say with you on your first day? And then if you were there for a year or 2 years or even 6 months, what did you accomplish during that time frame, given the challenges that were put in front of you and the resources that were available to you?
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like now when you're doing this is not the time to be coy. It's sell yourself. Sell it hard. I mean, obviously be truthful and be accurate, but really focus in on what it is that you accomplished.
Exactly, and be yourself. But, again, you're going to be interesting. The more specific you are in what you were able to do and like what your accomplishments and what your strengths are, you know, the more interesting you're going to be to a smaller group. And that can be counterintuitive, right? The shotgun approach of I want to be as interesting to as many people as I can has an effect where you become less interesting to that smaller group.
Yeah, no, that's very, very true. Have you seen, you know, video resumes work well?
So I don't know that I've seen video resumes. But
yeah,
I think
you know, that's
that,
you know, that's a stupid question.
Interesting things going on with that right now. But I think it's certainly, you know, the information that's available on YouTube on helping people prepare for a job can have an effect on how job applicants develop themselves. But I don't think we're at the point where, you know, kind of someone sending in a video clip is an impact yet, but you can kind of see where the world might be going with that.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, yeah. Maybe not a video resume, but maybe you have your resume and then you reference, you know, a YouTube clip where, I don't know, it lets someone's personality come out a little bit better.
Right. So I think that's a stage, that's something that's still evolving, but there's certainly some interesting things going on.
Okay. And so as a, when you were a job recruiter or in your position now, you are also responsible for the actual interviewing process?
Correct.
Okay, great. So we focused on the resume. Someone's honed it down to maybe 10 or 20. They've really crafted a specific resume. They send it out. They get that call that they've been waiting for. You know, we want you to come
right
in, and we want to talk to you about this position. Great. So what should the applicant be thinking at this point? How should they prepare for this? What are some things that you've seen work really well?
Yeah, so I think again, the most important thing is the basics. Right? This is being prepared. I mean, with a site like Google Maps, there's no excuse in getting lost, right? You should be there on time or slightly early, and you should know in advance how to get there. And I can't tell you, it's the people who show up unprepared and or late that went from being a talented candidate to, again, there's not a lot of information about the candidate at that stage. So anywhere they fall down on the basics can impact you negatively, and it's unfortunate because it's preventable. The second thing is similar to the resume. You know, you want to be yourself in the best. You want to put yourself in the best light possible, but you want to have the confidence that this is who I am. They're going to take me for who I am or who I'm not. One thing I think people can make a mistake on is to try to figure out what they're looking for, and then try to evolve how they're showing up so that it looks like that.
Yeah. So when someone does that, can you see right through it?
I think you can, and it's difficult to try to anticipate what someone is looking for. It's a guessing game, right? And interviews are hard enough to just try to answer to the best of your ability and represent yourself the best way possible versus trying to say, hey, what do I think they're looking for? It's just a high-stakes game that's not worth playing.
And I'm guessing you should also, again, going back to the resume, focus on the benefits. Focus on the things that you achieved.
I think that's right. You know, people are going to ask a range of questions, and during the interview, they're trying to get to know you. And oftentimes, they're going to know, you know, what are some of the big things you were able to accomplish? And so you should definitely be comfortable speaking about those types of things. That should not be a surprise.
And so I've done some interviewing of candidates in the past, and the one thing that always frustrates me more than probably any other is when you start talking about certain challenges that maybe someone has had at a particular job or maybe what their weakness was, what they would have liked to have worked on, and they give you this complete BS answer of, oh, my weakness was I just worked too hard. You know, and you just want to scream because that's not what you're looking for. What are some of the responses you've heard from people in handling that kind of question that really stood out as being, you know, really genuine but doing it in a way that didn't focus so much on their weakness that they couldn't overcome it?
Well, one way to handle it is to just name what you think the weakness is and then how you are able to address it within the context of your team. Right. So for some people, it might be, you know, I'm not much of a numbers person. right? And I've got a, but what I was able to do is make sure that I had someone on my team that was really good with numbers, and that actually ended up even better, right? So it made the team stronger by addressing my weakness with the group that I was with. And so you can point to, like, this is, if the conversation is framed around this is my failing, you know, that's a difficult spot to feel, to even just sit in as an interviewer. But if you talk about it like this is a challenge that I'm faced with, and this is how I was able to overcome it in the past, you can actually kind of get it to a constructive place where they learn more about you, and you can show how you're not only self-aware, but you were able to address that challenge and move yourself and the team you were part of forward.
And so I'm guessing whatever the challenge is, you have to at least have addressed it at some point. You can't simply say, oh, I really have a hard time showing up to work on time. I mean, once I'm there, I am the best. I can do this. I've done that. But, God, it's really hard for me to get there on time. You wouldn't really
exactly
necessarily want to just end it at there.
Exactly. You want to say, so things I've done is I make sure that the work that I'm doing takes place later in the day. And if it's an environment where that flexibility exists, again, this gets back to the group of people being interested in you, then that's not going to really be an issue, right? But I think you're coming with an authentic answer, which is more compelling than, to your point, kind of the stock, I work too hard or I'm a perfectionist type of answer.
Yeah.
It's probably not, probably not the real deal.
Right. No, that's a good one. I'm a perfectionist. You hear that one a lot. So keep it real, keep it authentic, even if it's something that you're, still working on. Being genuine about it, I think, is much more of a human quality than just trying to gloss over something. So handling the weakness is good in that way. What are some other things that you've seen work well in an interview situation? You talked about being confident.
Yeah.
Can someone be, too confident? Can someone walk in with just this sense of, I this is the job for me and I'm going to get it? Would that be a turn off or a turn on for a job?
Yeah, I mean, nobody likes that. I think you want to project confidence but not arrogance. And so, no matter how qualified you are, or even if you know everybody that works there and you feel like the job is in the bag, you can ruin that by projecting that arrogance that you are going to hire me before you've made the decision. And so a little sense of humility never hurts anybody. At the same time, I think it is important to be comfortable in yourself and represent yourself confidently. Like, I think this is a job I'd be really good at, right? And I think the line there is knowing that you could do the job well versus feeling like the company should already have decided to hire you, right? You need to kind of honor and respect the process that you're going through of the assessments, regardless of what you look like against the other candidates or how you think that is.
Yeah, great point. Very, very good point. About a year ago,
A question people often ask is like, well, how do I get confident? I'm nervous. I haven't had a job interview. You want to be prepared. You want to do all your research. Get ready for the interview yourself. But you also want to give yourself some time and space to get comfortable going into the interview. So, it's often not a good idea to be continuing to do the research right up until the minute you walk in the door. That last hour or so, you're better off spent like going for a walk, just kind of getting your head together. And so that when you walk in, you're ready to go. You want to make sure during the interview that you take a deep breath before you answer a question. That's probably the best advice I've ever given anybody, because it's such a stressful environment. You're going to be wound up, you're going to have adrenaline, and they're going to ask you a question. If you take a breath, that will allow your answer to come out, that'll allow you to give a better answer. Right? It'll calm you down, it'll let your blood won't be flowing so fast, and that will come across as more confident and more poised. And that's actually more important than making sure you've got the content of your exams are exactly right.
Yeah, just having that confidence and being somewhat relaxed and just taking that deep breath is a really great point, because it not only makes you more relaxed, but it gives you a second to really think about the response that you want to give.
Yeah, people underestimate it. If you're stressed out right before the interview, listen to some music, go for a walk, right? Go get a cup of coffee, say hello to some people. Like, get into a mode where you're going to feel good having a conversation. That's the most important first step.
And that's a good, really good way to put it, is you're having a conversation. You don't have to look at it as, oh my gosh, this is an interview, they're going to be grilling me. You're simply having a conversation.
Exactly.
So just switching gears for a second here, about a year ago I did a piece on what I thought was exploitive practices of some employers. And I didn't name any employers. Frankly, I didn't know who they were. But basically, employers who, in the hiring process, would ask the applicants to, you know, do certain tasks. You know, maybe it was a marketing company, and they said, all right, create some logos for us. We want to see what you can do in action. And so they would do this, and for a lot of people that I interviewed that went through this, they felt sort of cheated because they'd done this many times. They'd spent hours and hours, sometimes entire weekends, putting portfolios together specific for a job, and nothing ever came of it. So I don't know if this is a practice that you've heard of, but are there some things that applicants can do to sort of protect themselves against this?
It's an interesting question. So you're asking, you know, separate from kind of sending your resume and interviewing, companies can ask candidates to do something that's maybe not typical to the standard interview format. And what can they do to prevent that from happening to them?
Yeah, I mean, for example, the job recruiter says, "Listen, we just got a new client, and they need some new logos created, and we want to see, because we're looking at a lot of applicants, we want to see what people could actually do with this." And so they send them all off to create these logos for them. And I've talked to actually many, many people who have experienced this exact same thing.
So I think it's tricky, right? I think companies are always trying to look for ways to learn more about the applicant, right? And I think that sometimes candidates can feel that because it was an unfamiliar setting, they might not have come across in the best light. I think, you know, if the company is asking for, you know, hey, can you make us some logos, I would try to understand, you know, what are they trying to get at? Are they trying to understand your style? Are they trying to understand how fast you can get it done? So what is the gist of the challenge that they're putting in front of you? Or you can just say, you know, I'm not comfortable sending that. I'd rather come in and talk to you guys. And oftentimes, if you're doing something a little different, maybe there's a way to negotiate what activity they're trying to put in front of you.
Yeah, to get sort of the heart of what is it that they're looking for. That's a good point.
Because I think sometimes people feel like, you know, they didn't do it right, but maybe it was because they didn't understand what they were being asked. You know, and that's very similar to what can happen in an interview when they're asking certain types of questions. And so, you know, that's even helpful in an interview session. Like, make sure you understand the question you're being asked before you try to answer. Slow down, you know, stay prepared and really understand what the company is trying to get at.
Well, it reminds me of the Seinfeld episode with George where he's in these meetings and he can't think of a good response, and then after he leaves, it's like, oh, I should have said that.
Right. We all feel that way.
We all feel that way. And so if someone does feel that way, maybe they feel like they kind of blew an answer, and in hindsight, they should have said something differently. Does it ever make sense to maybe in your thank you note or in an email or a phone call to say, hey, you know what, I was really thinking about that question, and you know, this is probably maybe the best response I could have given and given it then? Or does that seem desperate?
I think part of it, it's all in how you write that response, right? That could come across as desperate or it could come across as brilliant in some situations, right? I think that it's always good to try to follow up with the people from you met, even if it's just for maintaining the connection. Maybe you don't get the job, but you've made a new connection, which is always positive. And so if you really feel like, wow, you know, I had this idea I wish I would have said, there's no harm in putting that into your follow-up. I don't think that you need to do that for every interview that you go on, but at times you really do have an idea 10 minutes later that you wish you'd said, and there's no harm in putting that in.
Okay. One of the other pet peeves that I've experienced, and I'm sure you can discuss this as well, is that you know, you're talking to an applicant and you realize kind of early on that, A, they have no idea who you are, the person doing the interviewing, and B, they really don't have any idea what the company does. And it's so easy now with the internet, with obviously Google, to do a search of the person who's going to be interviewing you, do a search of their name. Maybe they're on LinkedIn or some other site. Go to their company's website and go to the About Us page and figure out what this company does. I mean, how many times have you seen that happen?
So it's unfortunate that I've seen it happen too many times. Again, this falls into the category of the basics, right? I mean, just like in a professional setting, if you walk into a meeting and no one knows what they're supposed to talk about, it's almost, you know, it can be borderline of disrespectful. If an interviewer is there, they've taken the time to learn about your background, and they want to have a conversation with you. If you're not reciprocating that level of preparation, it only looks negative. And so, you know, you definitely want to understand what the company does, you know, how they make money, have some idea of what they're trying to do in business. So you're coming from an informed position when you try to answer some of the questions. It's very difficult not to come across as negative if you really haven't done the work.
It's an instant turnoff. As soon as I get that feeling, the interview in my mind is over at that point. And I think you raised a really good tip there, and that is as the applicant, you should try your best to know more about them and their company than they know about you, because they know a lot about you just from your resume.
Think about it this way, right? Like, in the interview, you're basically trying to get at the question, how can this person help our organization and how? And if you haven't done any thinking on how this person might answer that question, you're missing an opportunity.
And do you think it's a little too aggressive to go into an interview having done a lot of research about them and their company, and to maybe give them some ideas about just some ideas that you had about their company? And, you know, I noticed that I read this press release and you're doing this in this market, and, you know, I was just thinking, what if you also did this and did that? Does that come across as being a little bit too pushy, or is that a brilliant move?
So, again, it totally depends on the context, the tone of the conversation, and the idea that you're suggesting. You know, I think on the one hand, it could show that you've thought about the organization, which is a positive. On the other side, you're kind of talking to someone who is an insider in the organization and has a lot more information, right? And so your level of research is not going to get into the reality of what's going on within the company or what this person's job, you know, is. And so I think you want to have an informed discussion, but you just want to balance it that with the respect of, you know, you don't work there. And so suggesting the company should do something different could come across like a good idea, or could come across like, you know, you don't really know what you're talking about. Thanks for the idea, but
yeah, I think if you preface it like you suggested, saying, listen, I'm not an insider, and clearly you know a lot more about this than I do. I was just thinking the other night, boy, wouldn't it be interesting if, I just think it might be come across as, well, at least you can get into the head of the applicant, how they think, maybe what their ideas are.
Right. Coming across as humble and informed is a great way to show up. Right, so I think if you offer an idea and you're not suggesting that, you know, this company is doing things all wrong, you know, it just helps move the conversation along.
Okay, so the interview's over. You think it went well. What do you do next?
Well, again, I think it's important to follow up. But, you know, to your point about, hey, following up with the conversation we're having during the interview, I think similar to the resume, people can get into a habit of kind of writing the same thank you note to everybody. And, you know, we've all received these thank you notes that, you know, you can tell they wrote the same thing to everybody, and it's good that the follow-up was there. You kind of check the box. But the more you can put into furthering the one-to-one conversation, the better, right? If I got a letter that I really understand that they were talking about me, the interviewer, versus sending the same thank you email or thank you card to everyone I met with, you know, that's another opportunity to make a positive impression.
And so when you're after the interview, you get the thank you note and you're talking to your team, what kind of due diligence would you do? Do you go on to social networking sites and try to learn more about them, try to see if there's some dark hidden things that they've done?
The way you framed it sounds, you know, kind of creepy, but that's not really what we're doing. I think that, you know, everyone should be aware of their online presence, and that's kind of a fact that could show up in a different way on a whole range of organizations. But at the same time, I think you want to focus on the quality of information you have. And if you sat down with the person and met them face to face, that's really good information to make a decision on. Right, the resume they put together for you to talk about their accomplishments, that's really good information to make a decision on. And if you can, you know, if you can get references and get information about the people who have worked with them, that's that's helpful information as well. I think scouring the internet for every link that may come back to this person is it kind of moves away from what due diligence might be around making a hiring decision.
Great. And any other tips or any other comments you'd want to tell applicants out there that, again, might feel a little frustrated with the process and just, you know, maybe need a little bit of hope and encouragement?
I think one more thing, you know, gets back to networking. And, you know, generally speaking, you want to focus as much of your energy as you can on the things you can control. And so when people start networking, I think a common mistake is, I don't know anyone who's going to get me a job, and so why bother? The problem is it's typically not that one person you know that's going to get you the job. It's going to be someone connected to them in a way that you can't anticipate. So, you know, say your neighbor is a professor, and you're like, I don't really want a job at a school, so why would I tell him the type of opportunity I'm looking for? The fact is that professor's spouse or their neighbor could be the exact manager that you're looking for. You don't know where that connection is going to come from. So you really want to make sure when you're out there as a job seeker, talk about the type of opportunity you're looking for specifically and put it to all of your connections, right? Because they're going to take that soundbite or that, you know, that snippet of what you're looking for and give it out to their network. And that's where the opportunities will come from.
Beautiful advice, Brian. Really, really solid advice. I appreciate your time and all of your insights. I think through this conversation, you are going to help a lot of people be much more prepared to get that job. So thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Robert, thanks for having me.